I would say that it is complementary. You know, that's what I would say, that my research and my art complements each other very fittingly. So even though I would say that it was a bit, you know, demanding, because I cannot, I don't want to say that, that it wasn't demanding. And the reason I don't want to say it wasn't demanding is because today people, everybody today is a poet, you know, because of generative AI, you know. Somebody goes on ChatGPT or goes on Gemini or whatnot, and generate a poem and say they're a poet. You know, that's why I have to, you know, acknowledge that the process of doing art and doing poetry as art is, you know, demanding, is tough. I'll give you an example. I just said now that I'm doing poetic transcription of my data, and as an important step in my research, it takes me about 2 to 3 days to write a poem. Just one poem, 2 to 3 days. And I imagine for some people, it would probably take more. And I can also say that I'm only saying the 2 to 3 days of crafting the poem, not the other hours afterwards that I'll go back and tweak something and refine something. So, in summary, that process of doing PhD research has become immensely enriched by my own poetry art. And my own poetry art has immensely been enriched by, you know, my PhD journey. So they complement.
Yes.
It's perfectly. And I would say also that my research almost negatively affected my poetry. Because in a way, when I remember, and I can say this, when the editor of the poem, of the book, reached out to me, I was like, oh, Paul, you need to put away your academicness. I'm like, oh, you're right.
They're like, I can feel it in your poetry.
Yeah, he said, but you're writing this poem for the public, not for academic. I said, you're right. So that got me to go back to my poems and began to redo them, rejig them, you know, make them public for public consumption. You know, so that's that impact. So I cannot separate both. You know, they are two sides of a coin. Yeah.
Well, Paul, thank you. It has been so wonderful to chat with you today about your research. And thank you so much for coming in and doing the show. And best of luck with the rest of the dissertation. And I look forward to seeing the collection come out either at the end of 2025 or early 2026. And hopefully you'll get to debut across campus. We'd love to hear more about it. And hopefully you'll come back on Grad Chat to share more. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. Until next week, this is KM on the FM. Grad
Chat. What's going on? What's going on? Tanya Donaskigo, then on Zewa Dahum Sadaje, Ungahuan, and Hadiwanodos, Nene Aboriginal Voices, Oska Dewanyawa Oska, Ne Jota FM, CFRC.
It is 6 o'clock, and you're tuned to CFRC 101.9 FM. And we're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Ontario, Canada. Ani, Nichkiwank, Doug Farquhar, Dijniko, as Minwa Sean Story, as Na Minwa, and as Shnabi Nawewin. And Sean, it is gorgeous month of May, isn't it?
It has been gorgeous. As long as your bar for gorgeous isn't that high.
Oh, no. It is cool temperatures, and there's light rain on and off in different... Each week we've had a little tiny bit of rain. Perfect for watering the trees and the now new flowers coming up.
Definitely perfect for that, but it is chilly. Or it has been chilly.
That's all right.
But anyways.
Good.
So what's been up, Doug?
A couple of things. A couple of weeks ago, you were on assignment, and I just wanted to ask you a question or two about the hike that you did with others.
Yeah. I mean, it was a small hike. It was by no means a long one. It was in urban territory, I guess. Not exactly woods, so to speak, but it was along
a lot of trees there.
The well, I mean, sure, but still kind of urban-y.
Right.
And it was in the, I think it's called the Riverside Park. I've lived here so long, I don't really know what the name of the park is, but I believe it's Riverside Park in Napanee.
Oh, and, right near the waterfalls there?
Yeah, just right near the waterfalls. We started up there at the top. I guess it would be east of the train bridge.
Oh, right. Okay. Right at the falls. So, okay, good.
Well, yeah. So at the...
How far east did you go?
What do you mean?
Down to
That's the parking area.
Yeah, but when you walked the trail, did you go all the way to the park at the other end under the bridge?
Well, yeah, you can go all the way on that pathway to the other bridge. And you can either go up and over that bridge, or you can go under that bridge, and you walk all the way to the end of the dock, which, you know, is not very long. But so then you walk up and through the park up to the water park, and I guess do a loop, and we did that loop and came back down and through and got back to where it ended on that spot. So that was your end of the dock, and then you get on that dock and you walk all the way back. But you walk all the way back, you go underneath that same bridge, and you walk and walk. And then you got to go up that hill. So the hill is difficult.
But it gets you to the top of the falls, so you can stand back and say, I'm going to rest here a minute, or turn and go under bridge
you get
to your
to the
parking.
Top, and then you get back to your car and you get in and you drive home.
For a good cup of tea.
No real point in staying there. So that was that.
And did you have you and I, during the pandemic, we went to do one of our shows, the Aboriginal Voices shows, on the edge of that river. And that was fun. I really enjoyed that. But did you have any of the choir behind you in the water?
The ducks?
Yeah, the ducks and the geese?
Yeah, there was a few, I wouldn't say. A lot. I wouldn't say choir.
Well, remember when we were there and recording, we had they would sort of follow us down a little bit.
Yeah, that was weird because we did that in the winter time, and the ducks should have been gone south.
Yeah. Well, open water. They don't want to go anywhere. Why fly when you can stay?
I suppose, but generally they like to go south.
Yeah, lots of people do. All right, so that was good. Because a lot of the trails that we talk about, some of them are a little difficult for footing, but the trail you said is perfect for walking for any age.
I would say that any age for that particular one. I don't know where they're going next week, but I don't know where they go after that, but I won't be gone to that one.
No, but this is organized, like a group of people just, here we go, somebody is in charge of where to go for the hike, and then you just let everybody know and they just sign up, or is this a club?
No, it's a group thing. So at the beginning of the year you sign up and you show up and you get an email and let you know where the hike is going to be. And so you show up. Well, like it's not like required or anything like that. If you want to go, you go. If you don't, well, We have some that are in Belleville that tend to not want to go to the Napanee ones.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I know some communities have talked about doing this sort of thing, communities north of here. And actually, there's one in around Bancroft, just northwest of Bancroft. Mm-hmm. And they were wondering how they go about organizing it. So I'll tell them that they should listen to us on the 26th of May, and they'll learn a little bit.
Very little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not the one who organizes it. It's not me. I just participate.
You're supporting them.
I used to participate a lot, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Don't anymore.
Well, see, it turned out to be perfect because your field trip has been, now you're the field reporter for Aboriginal Voices as well as just the host.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, anybody bring along snacks?
Oh, gosh, it's not that long.
Oh.
They do bring water, mm-hmm. like a thermos.
Right. I was wondering about snacks because, whenever I've taken hikes with different groups or just family members, I always make sure that I take along some of what I call GORP, but it's...
It's not that long.
But it's just something in case somebody needs it. Yeah.
Well, they won't need it. It's only about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes hour 10, hour 15, but mostly average is an hour.
Right.
Which is just the right amount for people who aren't interested in movement, but aren't interested in like 4-hour epic, hikes and stuff like that.
Good. I'm glad you did that. Yeah, mm-hmm. One song comes to mind, though, after you say that, and maybe we could play that in a few minutes, called Shkoden. Digging Roots did that before, and a Shkoden is almost like the cadence of walking. Well, not really slowly like I do, but the cadence of walking. So if you hear the song, then think of being out on a good walking trail, something with sort of level, firm footing for you, and not something with rocks and water and mud. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to hear Shkoden?
I desperately hate the mud.
No, I won't ask why.
Just don't care for it.
Okay.
Anyways, carry on.
Good. All right. Well, we'll do Shkoden right now by Digging Roots, and then we'll be back to have a chat.
All right.
Can't slow down, can't sit still. Can I get some peace of mind? Can't slow down, can't sit still. Can I get some peace of mind? The only way we ever made a change was to be brave and unrestrained, leading with our hearts, not with our brains. Fear will be our courage now, hope will be our strength. Can't slow down, can't sit still. Can I get some peace of mind? Stand up, step up, get out of the way. Sit down if you got nothing to say. We gotta move, baby, move, baby, move, baby, move. Stand up, step up, get out of the way.
I was wondering if you had a chance to hear about the Senate with a new bill that they put together in May of 2026. Did you hear anything about Bill S-2?
No, sorry, Doug. I've been doing other things.
Oh, okay.
But I'm sure it's something dumb.
Well, no, well, actually, no. Well, I have to ask the question about what are they trying to do and why is it? So I did some investigation into it.
It's likely so they can pad their pockets with money.
This is going to be different, I think, because Bill S-2, which is the Senate's bill, it's called an Act to Amend the Indian Act, New Registration Entitlements. That's quite a title. So I had to think about what do they mean by new registrations? You know, I mean, a child is born to the community, then that's a new registration. But that's, you know, we're going to go back to look at what it is all about here. So
repeat that, Doug. What did you repeat? What did you tell me?
They want to amend the Indian Act at the federal government level, Senate and the Parliament, the House of Commons, and titled New Registration Entitlements. So who's allowed to be registered, I guess, through the Indian Act? First challenge, I think. I haven't heard much from AFN yet about it, although as I started doing some research on it, I found that the Grand Chief of the Assembly of First Nations did a presentation to the Senate and reacted to it. So we're going to talk about that later
today.
Did the
Grand Chief favorably react to it or unfavorably?
Well, I'll get to that in a few minutes. That's a good question because the aim of this is addressing historical inequities in the Indian Act registration. You know that they had part of the Indian Act before the 1970s, that if you were female and you left the reserve and the community and got married to someone not from the reserve or not from who is Indian Act.
Non-native, Doug.
Status. No, non-status. They're not non-native. That's the problem. No. It's because the children and the grandchildren of that individual who was disenfranchised, meaning that they weren't able to pass on their rights in the bill, then, you know, we'll see what happens. But it was a challenge. So, you know, but when they did change it, they changed it so that only one generation could receive status entitlement. This is a whole historical thing we have to go into later. But, well, there are people who don't have, quote, status and are not receiving what everyone in the community are receiving. So you mentioned about money. So this one's going to mean more money from the federal government into communities, and it means more people will have the rights under the Indian Act. And we're not talking about treaty rights. We're talking about just the Indian Act and who's allowed to be registered. You know, the whole thing with the Algonquins of Ontario in eastern Ontario, that they have an agreement in principle with the federal government, the provincial government, and the Algonquins of Ontario. But then when it came to who can be registered, the federal government did not accept a number of people who still have ancestors who are Algonquin. So that's what they're trying to rectify here, I think. So anyway, we're going to talk about that a little bit today and give you a bit of information. But I'll give you a quick rundown if you want the deregistration and banned rights, because this bill enables individuals to voluntarily apply for deregulation. You don't transfer their rights to another to a child that he was off the reserve. You know, look at the way people are moving today, and they're all over. We see, well, Kingston's a good example of that. In Kingston, we have people from many, many communities, Cree and Dene and people from the Quebec area, Innu, Algonquin, Mohawk, you know, people who have come from different areas, and they're here. So, you know, this bill is going to rectify some of that, you know, that problem of band rights gone. But there's also the second generation cutoff, and that's a title that I know two of the senators had written about, because they wanted to amend the bill to replace the restrictive, quote, second generation cutoff, unquote. And that rule meant that one parent would not be cut off and that parent's children would not be cut off. It's complicated, but, you know, we have a lot of students here at Queen's University who are from communities that the students come to Four Directions Center to get guidance and help because they're not getting it through the federal government's, what is it, Indigenous Services Canada? So anyway, interesting. It just came up in May. I learned about it mid-May, and I've been reading about it and finding out. And here we are in the 23rd of June, and we're wondering, what are we going to do with this? All right. So we'll play some songs, Sean, and then we'll move on to sharing this information. Is that okay?
Sure.
Such a familiar time and space. I can't revisit the holes. Kind of dreamlike state. Can't remember it all. But if you're here to remind me lately, I'm not here for the fall. I'm just circling the drain. Got the chemicals to blame, but I'm breaking all these chains like a moth. What the fuck?
away. I'm just a healer of who I used to be. With your shadow hanging over me, there's part of me that blames myself for taking so long to climb my way out. But you are somebody different than camouflaging as a better man. Now I throw paint at the walls again, so I can make some sense of the mess I'm left here with. Just a glimmer of light, showing you colors, now I'm so blue, so blue. Everything in my eyes turns black and white and blue. Your favorite shade of blue. Wish I could take back the winter time. Took your paintings off the walls, that's fine. I'd rather change this whole apartment than have to keep a piece of you in it.
Call, I come running. few fall now fall. There's one thing that I know. If you rise, I'm rising. All my fans think I got it all figured out, but lately, depression's what I'm thinking about. Yeah, I got a nice whip and a big ass house, but it don't mean shit without my mental health. And I've been crying out for help, praying to myself, I've been looking hella selfish. I just need a quick time out. I look at you and remember what this life's about. Don't ever forget your path, bro. You got so much life to live, so much value, so much spirit. Let them know. Speak it out. Don't hold that shit in, bro. Let's go.
There's one thing that I know. If you fall, I'll fall. There's one thing that I know. If you rise, I'm rising. If you call, I'll come running. If you call, I'll come running. And if you call, I'll come running. And if you call, I'll come running.
Day to listen. Anin bojo, jaj hobenese que desnicas, megazido dem, bachuanan, donjaba, ojibwe and ishnabe and dao. My name is Shoshona Kish, and I am one of your hosts for A Day to Listen 2023. I'm honored to be speaking to our next guest who plays such a pivotal role in our child welfare system for our children, Dr. Cindy Blackstock. She is the executive director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society and a professor at McGill University School of Social Work. She's been doing this work and advocating for Indigenous children's rights for over 30 years. Cindy, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Thank you. I'm really delighted to be joining you, Shoshona, from unceded Algonquin territory here in Ottawa.
Wonderful. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us where you're from and how you'd like to be known to our audience?
Sure. So my name is Cindy Blackstock. I am from the Gitxsan, which is in northern British Columbia. And I grew up all over northern BC, often in remote and rural communities. And some of my best friends were in the bush. They're the animals and everything else. So that whole knowledge set has really informed the way that I now look at the world. And I try to do my advocacy for First Nations kids. It's really one that takes into consideration the whole child and where they sit in the family and where they sit in the world, and of course, in relationship to the land.
Yes. Do you want to talk about that traditional place of the child in community and relationship to land?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, when they think that elders are the most important people in our nations, but my experience is different. Elders absolutely are honored and respected as knowledge keepers. But their role is actually to support what I view as the most sacred, is the children. The children are the closest to the Creator, and they represent the perpetuity of our cultures in First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities. And that's why the elders play such an important role in passing that knowledge along to them. So they are really, really key to not only ensuring our languages survived, our laws survived, our relations survived, but in looking after the land as well.
Mm-hmm. They really are our future.
I've always said to people, you know, the reason I focus on children is because children are the keepers of the possible.
I love that.
And we have an opportunity to raise a generation of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children that never have to recover from their childhoods and who grow up feeling really proud of who they are and able to make respectful friendships with other persons of difference. And a generation of non-Indigenous kids that don't have to say they're sorry. And that, to me, would be a great gift we could collectively leave as a legacy.
That is a beautiful possibility. And it is something that we can do. You know, and I know that you're working in this profound way, you know, around policy and legislation, but also in terms of connecting with people, because I think this is our time. We get to decide what comes next. We get to decide how we come together as greater communities and what we want our legacy to be. You know, and I think by now most people, you know, across Turtle Island have heard about residential schools, and many have heard about the 60s scoop where Indigenous children were taken from their families and forced into the child welfare system. But many people don't know about the Millennium scoop. Can you talk about that?
What I think people need to know is that First Nations children and young people receive a lot of their funding for public services from the federal government because of an old piece of colonial legislation called the Indian Act, which was used to force First Nations kids into residential schools and is still with us. It's still on the books. So on reserve in the Yukons, the federal government funds all public services. And that's why we have things with communities without water, or only 35% of First Nations have broadband access. It's really an apartheid public service system. But this has been allowed to continue forever. And then in the wake of residential schools, when the last one closed in 1996, families were left with the post-traumatic trauma, community trauma, from the residential schools with far fewer resources to deal with it. And yet, because the public didn't know any better, they judged the families as if they got more, not less than every other Canadian. Hmm. Now, when we were working in the late 1990s, we knew about these inequalities and we wanted to make sure that families had a chance to be able to safely raise their kids and recover from this trauma that affected them. And so we worked on solutions. And we found that there were many solutions documenting exactly the same problem, same solutions going back for decades. Canada was routinely choosing not to deal with it. And that meant that we were going to have to turn to the courts to force the government to do it, because there were more children being removed from their homes at that time than at the height of residential schools. And that number has only grown since then because Canada failed to implement the solutions that were already on the books that could have helped kids.
Why do you think that that is? Why do you think that Canada has failed to show up to these critical issues for First Nations children?
I think it's because colonialism is deeply rooted within the Canadian government. But our great hope is that is the Canadian public, because governments don't create change, they respond to change. And in the 6 weeks following the discovery of the children in unmarked graves into Kamloops, Eva Jewell and Ian Mosby have said that more TRC calls to action were done in that following 6 weeks than in the previous 6 years. So when Canadians say, look, there's no space for giving First Nations kids less services than everybody else in this country, and they keep on it, then change is going to happen. We've gotten the courts to agree with us that what Canada is doing is racially discriminatory. And there has been some positive action resulting out of those court decisions for First Nations kids. But we're still dealing with things like lack of water, lack of equitable education. And that's where public engagement is really important.
These kinds of conversations are really important because the media moves in these cycles. And sometimes, you know, these really important things don't find themselves in the headlines. And, you know, and I've been thinking about this a lot as the numbers of children are found at residential school sites. And somebody mentioned that that number is over 11,000 at this point. And, you know, and I think that we need to keep the conversation alive so that that change can happen. As soon as the silence falls across everything again, then we're in big trouble.
Yeah. Dr. Bryce, who back in 1907, found that Canada was underfunding so severely, quote, Indian health services. And there are such bad health practices in the schools that that was leading to children dying at a rate of 50% per year.
though.
And that was covered by national newspapers at that time. And then headlines would be like, children are dying like flies, absolute inattention to bare necessities of health. And the government chose not to implement those reforms. And a lot of those children then ended up unnecessarily in those unmarked graves. Other children joined them because of abuse and other types of horrendous harms as well. But I've always felt like when the headlines die, the children do too. Mm-hmm. So every time, one of the things I'd say to the public, every time when you see a gross injustice and you know there's a solution, for example, Canada's lack of action on murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls in 2S plus community, and you look away, that allows for that harm to continue. We have to keep our attention. And when we do, positive change happens.
Yeah, real things become possible. You mentioned an apartheid system, and I had a chance to visit South Africa recently, and many people don't know that the apartheid system in South Africa was in some significant way based on the reserve system in Canada, that, you know, a team of people came here and studied that system and then brought it back there, you know. And I think that it's really important for people to know the history here and the significance of that, because we get to make history now.
That's right. And we more often can more clearly see human rights abuses in other countries than we can at home. And the reason for that is that they become normalized through kind of government propaganda and other things. The opportunity of learning from the past is to learn the lessons, not just the events, and feel guilty. That's not going to get anybody anywhere. But to learn the events in a way that prepares you and your children and others in your circle to actually cast a different type of Canada, one that lives up to the values it says it espouses, of justice, of freedom, of respect, and all these things. It becomes possible because we're courageous enough to embrace the truth. And without the truth, we aren't able to elevate ourselves or create a society that is deserving of all children in this country. So I think that this is very, very important to do.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, and I think that that people in general relate to that, you know, and I think sometimes the weight of the emotional response to things and feeling a sense of powerlessness in addressing them is really gets in the way for many people. I want to congratulate you on the big news that came recently around your work with Canada's Human Rights Tribunal approving the landmark $23.4 billion settlement for Indigenous children and families harmed by the welfare system. And this is the largest class action settlement in Canadian history. It's very incredible work, Cindy. And I know that there's a federal court that still has to approve it. But if they do, my understanding is that 300,000 people are expected to be compensated. Many of them are children. Yeah. What is the significance of this case for our communities beyond you know, the settlement?
Well, I think one of my messages to Canada is you wouldn't have had to pay any of that had they actually acted on the solutions before we filed the case, because there would have been no victims and therefore no one would have been harmed and by its discrimination, and then it wouldn't have had to be paid. But the fact that they were hurt, and in fact the deaths of some children were linked to Canada's not discrimination, I think it was really important that it be a significant penalty against the Canadian government, because they did this harm on the heels of the residential schools and the 60s group, and they repeated it again. They're a repeat offender for our kids. So there needed to be some measure of justice for each of these victims. And that's an acknowledgement that what they went through was wrong. It was illegal behavior on behalf of the government of Canada, and that they matter as an individual. We also need to have the supports in place so that they can, you know, use this money in ways that uplift their lives. So going on to school, or maybe going on the trip of their dreams somewhere, reconnecting with family, all these things that, you know, young people want to do, I think is really, really important. But the major public policy message is that Canada has to choose to do better when it knows better. Because otherwise, it's not, it, we're all going to pay the price for it. And most importantly, some children are going to pay for their childhoods. And it's not, that's totally unacceptable.
Yes. Yeah. Do you see an impact, a potential impact from this settlement on the Indigenous child welfare system moving forward for the kids currently in care?
Yeah, well, one of the big pieces of this is that when we talk to folks who were victimized by Canada's discrimination, their number one goal is to make sure other kids don't go through it. So in addition to this $23.4 billion of compensation, we're working to stop the discrimination and make sure it doesn't happen again. And in that way, we've had something called Jordan's Principle, which we're really honored to work with Jordan River Anderson's family on, and he's a little boy it's named after, which ensures that First Nations children, youth, get the services they need when they need them. There's been over 2 million services provided to kids under Jordan's Principle since the tribunal ruled in 2016. And we've also, since 2018, we were successful with a non-compliance order in getting services out there in child welfare. So more prevention services. In fact, the first significant investment of keeping First Nations children together with their families since Confederation. There's been all kinds of money government has spent to split for children away from their families. This is the first chance to keep them together. And that's in the billions and billions of dollars. But I want to make sure that the discrimination stops, that there are no other victims from Canada's discrimination, and that we actually set in play a relationship going forward where First Nations kids are viewed as being worth the money because they are sacred, like we started our conversation out. Yes. And that way they can grow up healthy and proud.
What can individuals do to create, like, to support that vision for the future and, like, directly impact how things move?
Write to your members of parliament and your members of the legislature. Support Jordan's Principle. Say, look, the day is over for continuing to give First Nations kids less. Let's give them the childhood they deserve. Make sure yes. that when someone comes knocking on your door at election time, I always print out a copy of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action on the murdered, missing Indigenous women and girls calls to justice. And I ask them, I say, what have you personally done to implement these and make a difference? Why your party? I want to know what you've personally done. And if they don't know that, I tell them that they're going to have to come back once they have an answer. Like, these are the things that actually make a difference. Make sure you wear that orange shirt, not just on Orange Shirt Day or when you hear headlines about these children in unmarked graves, but that you do that as many days of the year and wear it into the voting booth. That is really, really important. And we actually even have a calendar families can order. And every month there's something that you can do free of charge with your family or with your community or with your school to implement the TRC's calls to action. I think another thing we were able to achieve with compensation that I'm happy about is that the estates of children and families who died before the compensation was awarded, but who had experienced the discrimination, they will be compensated. And those children in the unmarked graves under the Indian Residential School Assessment, they got nothing. And I think that's something that needs to be made right. I think that the government of Canada needs to compensate the estates of these young children. And so that's something else to bring to the attention of your member of parliament or your member of the legislature. Most important, there's absolutely things you can do. It's not going to cost you any money. It's not going to take a lot of time, but you can make a world of difference.
Amazing. Cindy, this will air on September 30th. And, you know, the theme for us this year is around Mino Bamatsuin, which in Anishinaabe Mwin means that good road or that good life. And we're talking about that in the context of Indigenous identity and Indigenous excellence. What are you reading? What are you listening to? Who is inspiring you right now?
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, September 30th is also my birthday. So my birthday wish for everybody is that you get onto the website and you do those things to support First Nations kids.
Yes.
In terms of inspiration, one is we're going to be honored to be hosting her 91st birthday, a party next week, and that's the incredible Elenisa Bamsawin. Folks, go onto the National Film Board. You can watch her over 50 documentaries on all kinds of topics on First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples free of charge. in French and in English and often in First Nations languages. Do check her out. For me, of course, Jordan River Anderson and the legacy he left as Jordan's principal and the incredible Shannon Kustachin, who created Shannon's Dream, a teenager from Attawapiskat First Nation who led the largest child rights movement in the country to get what she called safe and comfy schools and equitable education for First Nations kids. And I would also say the non-Indigenous kids who stood with First Nations kids by coming to the tribunal hearings and by writing letters to the government saying, you know, this isn't about charity. This is about justice. And this is about making sure I can grow up in a Canada where First Nations kids don't get left behind again. You know, those are the people of inspiration to me. And I am forever grateful that they're out there. And I hope that they continue to kind of multiply in number.
Cindy, it's been such a pleasure learning from you and talking to you about your incredible work. Chi Miigwech, for all that you are doing for our communities and our kids.
Thank you, Shoshana.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
A Day to Listen, in partnership with the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund. Learn how you can take reconciliation action at daytolisten.ca.
Hey and hey, yo oh, hey and hey, yo oh, shinna da kiddy la kiddy low, hey and hey, yo oh, hey and hey, yo oh, shinna da gray, shinna da sweet, shinna da ask a say and hey, young, shinna da gray, shinna da sweet, shinna da ask a say and hey, young, shinna da.
Hi, this is Chelsea.
And this is Yayi, and we are Twin Flames.
You're listening to our new single, Just Like a Ghost.
Could my hand watch me bleed? Jump through a photograph, make believe. You said I'm sorry when I needed it most. Show up in my dreams just like a ghost. 'Cause I loved you more.
through my veins, love is blind and love is pain.